I'm Andy Borowitz in for Leonard Lopate. Well, when you hear Twist and Shout, or Piece of My Heart, or I Want Candy, they're instantly recognizable, of course. But these hits were all written by one guy, Burt Burns. And if that name isn't familiar to you, you're not alone. Rolling Stone magazine called his saga one of the greatest untold stories in rock and roll. Joel Selvin, former music journalist for the San Francisco Chronicle, spent 16 years, wow, researching Burt Burns. His book, Here Comes the Night, and that's another one by Burt Burns. Here Comes the Night, The Dark Side of Burt Burns and the Dirty Business of Rhythm and Blues, examines the rise of Burt Burns and his impact on music history. It's published by Counterpoint, and I'm so happy that it's brought Joel Selvin to our show. Hello, Joel.
Great to be here.
So tell me, a lot of times these songwriters, great songwriters, are kind of behind the scenes. We don't hear about them. But we've heard of Lieber and Stoller, and we've heard of a lot of other famous songwriters of that era. Why has Burt Burns been so forgotten?
Well, it's more than that he died a long time ago before these figures were celebrated at all. He actually, he had powerful enemies that worked hard to erase his memory. Mm-hmm. Downplay his accomplishments, especially in regards to the history of Atlantic Records. Ahmet Erdogan and Jerry Wexler never forgave Burns for the way he dissolved their partnership over the Bang Records label.
Mm-hmm. And these are the guys. Ahmet Erdogan is famous as the legendary man behind Atlantic Records and also one of the prime movers behind the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. So he helped shape the rock legacy as he saw it a little bit. What was their blow-up when you refer to Bang Records? What happened?
Well, Bang Records is a partnership between the partners of Atlantic and Burt Burns. It's the only kind of is the only partnership the Atlantic guys were in outside of their own record label. And it did very well. The Atlantic guys decided they wanted to increase their stake, mm-hmm. and Burns resisted. They came to a serious disagreement about it. And mob associates were called in. Jerry Wexler from Atlantic was under the impression that if he addressed this issue with Morris Levy of Roulette Records, who the FBI has figured was the front man for the syndicate in the record business, that that would handle it. But he wasn't prepared for Burns's associates. Burns brought Tommy Eboli, the head of the Genovese family, and Patsy Pagano, who was a union official, among other things, into the situation, and Atlantic Records found themselves at the end of gangsters threatening them and taking away a recording studio and considerable amount of cash and negotiating the end of the partnership. Now, Wexler never spoke of this. Ahmet never spoke of it. When I called Jerry Wexler and I told him that I was going to work on this book, he said, well, I don't know where he's buried. But if I did, I'd piss on his grave.
Wow. Well, let's start with the happy part of the story, which is the music. Who was Burt Burns? How did he get his start? What was his musical inspiration? What were his first hits?
Burt Burns grew up in the Bronx, and in the late 40s and the early 50s in New York, there was a Latin music boom, and he became infatuated with the mambo. He was an outstanding mambo dancer. He tried his hand at a little bit of the record business early in the 50s. But really, Burns was not a very serious young man. At age 14, he'd had rheumatic fever. And in 1945, open-heart surgery was as much science fiction as flying to the moon. He was told he wouldn't live to see 21. So he dropped out of school and really didn't do anything. He was a ne'er-do-well for many years. Eventually, he got into the record business at age 30. $50 a week song plugger for a publisher named Robert Mellon. And within 2 years, he was on the top of the charts, had a penthouse apartment and a lot of bucks, and was one of the great record men at the time.
So what did he do in those 2 years?
Well, the first year was a bunch of sort of silly records looking for his voice. When he connected with this Afro-Cuban sound of the mambo on a song like Twist and Shout, which he did with the Isley Brothers, he found his soul, he found his heart, he found his voice as a songwriter. And he began to turn out a steady series of R&B hits with people like Solomon Burke, The Drifters, Benny King. mostly all flavored with this Afro-Cuban sound. Mm-hmm. And that's quite distinct from the kind of Latin sounds that Lieber and Stoller and Burt Bacharach used on their records. Those were more Brazilian rhythms drawn from the Baion music of Brazil. The Afro-Cuban stuff's more raw, raunchy, robust, sensual.
Mm-hmm. What were some of the other songs that you would say fit in that vein? That he
My Girl Sloopy, his original version of My Girl Sloopy by the Vibrations is one of the most pure, unfiltered Afro-Cuban experiences in the R&B world. Of course, it was covered a number of years later by a garage rock band out of Ohio called the McCoys.
Mm-hmm.
And Burns had his hand in that record. That was on the Bang label. It's a different record as a rock record. It went on to become one of the great songs of that era. In 1965, there were like 15 versions recorded of Hang On Sloopy.
One thing I thought was really interesting was your description of his collaboration with Van Morrison and the band Them. Can you tell us something about that? Because that seemed like he was working in a completely different vein from something like Twist and Shout.
When Twist and Shout went across the world as a big hit record in 1963 everywhere but the United States, Burns, alerted to what was going on in England, went there and conducted some recording sessions. He was the first American producer to work in a British recording studio. He came back the following year to work on a group Decca Records in England had signed called Them out of Ireland, and Van Morrison was the lead singer. And he brought them a song called Here Comes the Night. I don't think that is that different from his R&B work.
Mm-hmm.
The arrangements are different, the instruments are different, but it's got the same kind of despair and agony and urgency that his R&B songs does, and the Van Morrison sings it like a black American vocalist.
Mm-hmm.
Jimmy Page is the guitar player. He wasn't a member of Them, but he was a session player that Burns had met on his previous trip to Europe. And
was he with the Yardbirds at that point or not with the Yardbirds
yet? No, he was a 20-year-old session player.
Mm-hmm. I'm Andy Borowitz, in for Leonard Lopate, and I'm talking about this fascinating new book, Here Comes the Night. It's the story of Burt Burns, one of the sort of, I guess, forgotten men of rock and roll. The author is Joel Selvin, and he's talking with me. Now, you have a really fascinating kind of grace note in the book, which you say that after he recorded Here Comes the Night with Them, he went back into the studio and recorded it with Lulu, who is probably not the most famous singer of that era to American ears, but was a big star in England. How different was that recording? I just actually watched on YouTube. I urge everybody to do it. It's such a kind of cool, haunting version of that song. How did he reimagine it?
Well, that's very typical of the New York record scene of the era, and especially of Burns. Once you had a piece of material, it was in the catalog, and you worked the catalog. And if you could think of a different way to employ the material or even a piece of the material and recycle it, that was all part of the hustle. No telling which song is going to be successful, so he did it as a rock combo song with Them, and then 2 weeks later, he takes Lulu into the studio and does it as a big symphonic pop ballad. It's a wonderful record, but it was entirely unsuccessful. It was on the charts in England for a week and then just disappeared. I don't think anybody's really even heard the thing since.
It's a pretty inspirational song, though. As a matter of fact, it's hard to listen to Tom Petty's song, Here Comes My Girl, and not think that he was thinking of Here Comes the Night when he was writing that.
It shows up a lot. It also shows up a lot in Burns's work. There's a Benny King song where he comes to the chorus and just goes into a stop break and just shouts, Here Comes the Night.
Why not?
There's a song called There They Go by a soul group called The Exciters that Burns wrote that's pretty much the same song.
Mm-hmm. When did things start going bad? Things were going really well for him. He was racking up hit after hit after hit, and then things really went bad with Atlantic Records. What was the beginning of the end for him?
Success.
Mm-hmm.
Burt Burns' career was a skyrocket, and when Bang Records started, the first release was The Strange Loves I Want Candy, a top 10 record, and 2 months later they put out the McCoys' Hang On Sloopy, and that was a number one hit. It was a time when Atlantic Records was not really all that successful, and they were trying to sell the label to ABC television, and that's when the Atlantic guys decided they wanted to reclaim more of their partnership and more Burns' publishing. Burns was a tough Jew with a short time to live, and he became a fierce defender of his own work, and he took the company back from Atlantic Records. At that time, the biggest seller on his label was Neil Diamond, and he got into a dispute with Neil Diamond, who wanted to move on to another label and a bigger company and get rid of the influence of the people that had really started his career. Burns reacted very badly to that, took a very aggressive position, and stink bombed a nightclub show by Diamond, and threatened his manager. And I mean, they contacted bodyguards and the district attorney. And at that time, also Van Morrison, who had Brown Eyed Girl, was coming back to record a second album. And he'd moved on artistically. He moved on to what would be eventually an album called Astral Weeks. And of course,
there's
a wonderful, imagistic, poetic album, but it didn't sound like hits to Burns. And so there was a lot of frustration in his relationship with Van Morrison. He was furious at Neil Diamond. He'd broken up with the Atlantic guys in a violent, vicious way. And his heart was getting worse every day, and the symptoms were getting much more pronounced. And he was starting to write songs about his heart that just spoke so much. I mean, he wrote the line, take another little piece of my heart. Mm-hmm. And he shopped it around to try and get Van Morrison to write the song. And, you know, Van didn't collaborate. So he took it to Jerry Ragavoy, who he'd written a bunch of songs with, like Cry Baby with Garnett Mims. And Ragavoy helped him finish the song, finished it up, and they recorded with Irma Franklin, Aretha's sister, a year before Janis Joplin got to it. And I asked Jerry, when I talked to him, if it occurred to him that Burns had been writing a lot about his heart. And he looked at me with utter shock, and it hadn't even occurred to him until I asked the question. So obviously this guy was getting very focused on the pending end of his life and all these factors that were crushing him and crashing down on him. Led to this fatal heart attack on December 30th, 1967. They buried him in Riverside Chapel up on Amsterdam, 75th or something like that, on January 1st, 1968. And, you know, I say this in the book. They didn't know it at the time, but the whole era was over. Mm-hmm. Lieber and Stoller had retired. Atlantic Records was sold. Phil Spector was living as a recluse. Doc Pomus was running poker games in the Hotel Forest. Goffin and King had split up. She'd moved to California. The thing was washed up. They just didn't know it. And Burns was the first one that died. He was 37 years old.
So got into music at 30 and dead by 38.
Yeah.
What a story. I've been speaking with music critic and reporter Joel Selvin. His biography of the little-known songwriter and record producer Burt Burns is called Here Comes the Night, The Dark Soul of Burt Burns and the Dirty Business of Rhythm and Blues. It's published by Counterpoint. And Joel, thanks for joining me today.
And it's been great.
You're all alone, and nobody calls you on the phone. Don't you feel like a cry? Don't you feel like a cry? Well, here I am, honey. Come on, you cry to me.